Bears a Microsoft Office 365 MVP who knows practically everything there is about Office 365. He does stand-up events talking about Office 365. He writes about Office 365 on his blog site, and he does in-person training sessions and training videos about Office 365. There's also me, Mark Keane. I'm the voiceover guy and producer of this podcast. I'm also a Microsoft Azure MVP and a Microsoft Azure architect, helping people move to Microsoft Azure and consume it by helping them to make sense of it. This is a Need to Know podcast with Robert Crane and Mark Keane.
Contact us by email.
Feedback@needtoknow.cloud. It's your destination for anything Microsoft Cloud, including Azure and Office 365.
And Office 365.
And Office 365. Welcome to another Need to Know podcast. It's Mark Keane here, and this is episode number 137. Again, no Robert Crane with us at the beginning. And also, too, no news talking about Azure and Office 365. The reason for it is because we are pumping out billions of sessions of this podcast in the lead up to Ignite Australia happening on the Gold Coast next week. And we are talking to many of the presenters that are presenting at the Ignite conference in Australia next week. And so this next presenter we got on for this podcast, which both Rob and myself are going to be speaking to, is a Microsoft Cloud Solutions Architect for Partners. And he is doing two sessions at Ignite. One is Jenkins and Azure DevOps Tooling to Increase Business Value. And Node.js plus Azure App Service equals happy times. So we're also speaking to Stefan Boudot coming up very, very shortly on a podcast just around the corner, and also Hamish Watson. But right now we are speaking to Michael Friedrich. Michael, how are you?
Good. How are you doing this morning?
I think I know how to pronounce your last name, but I'm not going to be game. I'm going to leave it all up to you to do the introduction, your name, and everything else.
It's Michael Friedrich. I'm currently working at Microsoft as a Cloud Solutions Architect for Partners. Which is, I think, is a really awesome role. I've been really enjoying it for the last 6 months. But previous to that, I've worked at a few different roles within the IT industry, from system engineering to technical architecture, for a few different big companies from Australia, from places like Harvey Norman IT and News Corp Australia.
Excellent. All right. So with that, we might get into it. So the reason why I've got you on at this time of the year, as like all our other guests on the podcast that we're getting on at this time, is because it's the lead up to Microsoft Ignite. So at the moment, the time we're recording this session, we've got about 22 days to go until the kickoff of Microsoft Ignite. And so you, Michael, are one of the speakers. In fact, you're doing a couple of sessions at MS Ignite, is that correct?
Yes, absolutely. Super excited.
So what are the sessions that you're presenting?
Yep, no problem. So I'm doing two sessions. The first one is around Jenkins and Azure, and that's all about how you can use DevOps tooling like Jenkins to increase the value of your business value, using some good DevOps practices like continuous integration and continuous delivery. And then I've got a second session which is entitled Node.js plus Azure App Service equals happy times. So with that one, I'm going to go through Node.js, what that is, what it does, and Azure App Service, and why they make a happy combination inside of Azure.
That's cool, because you've got the little smiley face at the end there. So that stands for happy times. I was thinking happiness, but it's actually happy times. So with that, can you please, we might dive into the first session a little bit more deeper as far as what that entails and Jenkins on Azure. Now, I might kick off with first question in relation to that. But with Jenkins on Azure, Jenkins is something I've heard before with Mark Rusinovich talking about Jenkins. He's been using it himself for various things. So it's obviously got a name out there in the market, and people sort of have heard of it before, but people might not know what it is exactly. So if you want to just explain to the folk what exactly Jenkins is.
Yeah, of course, not a problem. So if you go on the Jenkins website, jenkins.io, it describes itself as an open source automation server. Which is pretty cool, because Jenkins is all about automating stuff. So where I think this works well in the IT industry, and particularly software development, is around your delivery pipeline. So what a delivery pipeline is all about is taking ideas and concepts as a team, as a, maybe you're set up as a feature team where you're doing some kind of agile project, and taking those features and delivering them to your user base or your customer base, which is really cool. And Jenkins is a great product for that. I think Jenkins is a great product because it's really good at it. For me, it's quite easy to pick up. It's got some pretty cool concepts around jobs. But what I really love about it is plugins. So it's got a really good and rich community behind Jenkins, and it's got over 1,000 plugins. So basically anything you can dream up almost, there's a plugin for it. So what that correlates to inside of the IT industry is that if you're looking to automate tasks, whether it be on-premise or in the cloud, there's generally a plugin for that. So then you can start delivering business value by automating your pipeline. So you can do stuff like continuous integration, continuous delivery, and you can automate all your tasks, including testing and pushing to production.
So is that basically a development tool, or is that something that an IT pro could use in their day-to-day administration environment?
Yeah, absolutely. So it tends to be used, typically I see in the industry, as a delivery pipeline or for use for continuous integration and delivery. But absolutely, I think it is a great tool for an IT pro to start kind of looking at automating their environment. So I've worked in a few big IT shops, and some of the ways we used to automate things is just by running scripts on servers. So I think Jenkins is a good start for people to start looking at automating their infrastructure. One thing straight off the bat you could look at is, I've worked a lot of places where we looked at automating kind of daily checks or daily tasks, just to make sure your infrastructure is running up to scratch. And Jenkins could potentially be used to do that.
Okay, so with Jenkins, is it open source?
Yes.
Great. So as you said before, that it's got an awesome community out there. How long can you give us a bit of a history of the product? Like how long the product's been around for and how long sort of you've been using it for or been sort of familiar with the product?
Yeah, of course, no problems. I'm not quite sure exactly how long Jenkins has been around, but I've been using it for over a year now. I do it for various different tasks myself. Actually, one of my demos, which depending on your definition of cool, which I think is quite cool, is I've just recently launched a blog. And what we're doing on stage is writing a new blog entry and then talking through how Jenkins can automate pushing that into production.
Okay, so is Jenkins something we need to install on a server? Does it run as a web service? How does it actually, obviously it's a automation, but something's going to be running somewhere for it to monitor this and kick off. So, do you need to set up a VM to get Jenkins running? How does that side of it actually work?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's quite flexible, which is good. You definitely, if you want to host it yourself, you can spin up a few VMs. It's got this concept of kind of master nodes and slave nodes. So if you've got a lot of projects being run through Jenkins to do stuff like automated testing or continuous integration or delivery, you can have masters which hold the configuration, and then you can have worker nodes or slaves that actually do the processing. So if you've got 20 or 30 projects that are doing a lot of constant continuous integration, then you can get quite a lot of jobs banked up, so it can scale horizontally from that regard. What's also really cool about Jenkins is there's a kind of well put together Docker container as well, up at Docker Hub. So if you've got a Linux box or a Windows box and you want to get a Docker container running up and quickly, you can use Jenkins for that as well.
So going on with Rob's question, I guess, so the title mm-hmm. of your presentation is Jenkins and Azure. So
yep.
Jenkins and Azure, am I right in saying that it's probably a mix of both IaaS and PaaS, or what's the deal with the relationship between the two?
Yep, no problem. So in my demonstrations, I'll be running Jenkins on a virtual machine, as Rob said, to be automating my tasks. But then I'm really going to be using it to show you how you can automate tasks through continuous integration and delivery inside of Azure. So I'll be building web apps in Azure, so using Azure App Service to build web apps. So I've got some demonstration Node.js web applications that we'll be building. And I've also created a static HTML page, which we pushed up into Azure Blob Storage to serve content out of there.
Okay, so what's the difference, say, between Jenkins and something like Azure Logic Apps and maybe even something like Microsoft Flow, which are also, I suppose, automation engines? What's the difference, where does it sit in the spectrum?
In regards to that, I suppose, so Jenkins is open source. It's got a great community backing it. It's quite flexible, I think, which is why the community's gravitated to it. You can really get down and kind of really deep into it, into the back end of side of things, and really start to customize and configure it. Logic Apps is a great product, and it's more of a hosted environment. And there's some curated connectors you can use to connect up different services, or you can also write your own. But Jenkins has been around for a long time. It's got a really good community supporting it.
So I think the confusion, I guess, is because there's a lot of automation tasks that Jenkins can run. So you can basically, there's over 1,000 plugins and stuff, which you mentioned before, use it to push things to production. And as you said, works with blog posts and stuff. But I think the confusing part is because we're not coming from a developer background, or some of us are, but I'm not personally, is the whole continuous integration piece of the puzzle. I think that's the main difference between Jenkins and something like Flow, for example. Can you just explain exactly the whole thing about continuous integration and delivery when it comes to development?
Yeah, absolutely. So at a really high level, I'm going to talk through delivery pipelines. So that's all about getting your features and your kind of, maybe your bug fixes or enhancements, really taking that from concept and getting that in front of your users. And there's, in my talk, I'm going to go through a few DevOps practices, and there's a really great Channel 9 MSDN series around that. And one of those practices is continuous integration. So when we talk about delivery pipelines at a really high level, there's a few stages that most pipelines have. Now, every pipeline is different between environments because people have different constraints and requirements. But at a really high level, it's just build, test, deploy. So you have some software, you want to build it, you want to test it, you want to deploy it. And where continuous integration fits into that puzzle, it's really all about checking your code into some source control repository and then doing automated build and automated test. And the reason we're doing that is because, A, it's all automated. B, it's all stored in source control, and you get early bug detection and speed. So every time you check in some code, you have an engine, in my case Jenkins, which is going to automatically build that code and then test that code for you automatically. So you can find early bugs. So you're pushing code up and you're building it straight away, testing it straight away. So that's kind of the continuous integration piece, all about speed, reducing costs, eliminating waste, and just really testing your code as soon as you check the code into source control repository.
Okay, so if we turn our attention maybe now to the second session here, I mean, in a nutshell, why are you saying that Node.js and Azure App Service equals happiness?
Happy times.
Of course. Happy times. Exactly right. So I've been doing some Node.js kind of development on my own. It's on the weekends and during the nights. It's something I really, really love. And I've been using it to run in Azure App Service. And What I think that's really cool is Azure App Service is a really great platform. It's really open and really powerful. And personally, through my experience, I think it's a great place to run your Node.js code. And there's a few reasons for that, obviously. The first one is that I've got two themes kind of to this talk, and it's really about openness and powerful. So the Azure App Service platform itself is quite open in regards to Node.js. And the reason I say it is because there is a really cool open source module that Microsoft has called IIS Node. So basically, it's an IIS kind of plugin that sits on top of IIS in Azure App Service, and it does some really cool things with the Node.js code. And the first one here is, I think, is scalability. So what it does is, so Node.js is a single-threaded asynchronous runtime. So normally what that means is you'll get one process called the node.exe process, which executes all your code. And what's really great about this IIS Node module for IIS is that it'll automatically scale this single-threaded application for you on your behalf. So inside of Azure App Service, underneath your instances, you might have a 2-4 cores inside of that instance, and IIS Node will actually scale your node.exe processes to the amount of cores that you have. So say you've got a 4-core instance inside of Azure App Service, you'll actually get 4 node.exe processes under the hood. So it'll manage all that scalability. So scaling up and scaling down, it'll actually manage those processes for you, which I think is really, really cool.
So, okay, so yes, it is, it's super cool, and this is the power of PaaS in Azure, is the fact that you can run things on the platform and you don't have to worry, and it scales. It's enormous scale behind it. Now, with Azure App Service, if you can tell the folk exactly, now, because I understand there's different components of Azure App Service. I think web apps, there's mobile apps and so forth, and things like that. But if you want to just sort of give a brief overview of Azure App Service as a whole and what is it exactly?
Yeah, absolutely. So as you explained, Azure App Service is a PaaS platform inside of Microsoft Azure. And it has really probably five flavors now, which it comes in. So you've got web apps, mobile apps, API apps, logic apps, and functions. And the platform's kind of broken down into those different pieces. And it's all really about how you want to run your code. So you might want to run your web apps slightly different to your mobile apps, to your API apps. And then we've got Azure Functions, which is a new service that runs on top of that as well. But as a whole, the platform, it's really about enterprise grade. So we've got a global data center footprint. We have hybrid support. So if you want to have your PaaS environment connected on-premise, we can support that. It's also got some great integrations with Azure Active Directory. Always have trouble saying that. But also, it's a fully managed platform. So you get built-in auto scale and load balancing. You get high availability with auto patching as a platform. And there's also some great backup and recovery features inside of that.
So just quickly, throw a quick question in. Sorry to interrupt.
Right.
But which part of the Azure App Service does Node.js run on? Is it the API part, the functions, logic? Which part does it run on?
Yep. So it can run in web apps, mobile apps, API apps, and functions. So in my demonstrations, I'll be running Node.js web applications and also some Node.js functions or JavaScript functions. So they're the two pieces I'll be definitely focusing on as part of my talk.
Okay, so it seems that we're getting to a situation now where obviously Microsoft is really beginning to embrace the open source and caught a whole lot of people who were typically outside their environment. Are you seeing more and more of, you know, those sort of people coming across into the Azure environment, embracing the new way that Microsoft is looking basically at, you know, the code as code rather than being siloed?
Yeah, absolutely. So in my role at Microsoft, one of the reasons I think it's really cool is I tend to focus on more of the open source people on side of Azure. So I work in the partner community, so I really focus on partners who focus on open source in the cloud. And I've been working with them for 6 months now. And they've been really receptive to the Microsoft open source message, which is really cool. And they have noticed Microsoft's moving more towards embracing open source as a platform. And that message is landing really well, and they're quite excited.
Yeah, so it's interesting because it's all developer. And every time we talk to people like yourself, it's awesome, the fact that Microsoft's got this. And it's literally, you don't have to worry about the underlying hardware. The hardware's there, it's running. You just focus on writing the code and basically being creative and just doing what you want to do and pushing stuff up there into the platform, and it just runs. So is this type of language, like Node.js, for example, are these languages particularly hard to use, or what's the best way that somebody can sort of get their hands dirty and really sort of understand the language and get into it?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've been have a very big Windows background most of my career. Very, very proficient with PowerShell. And then probably about 2 years ago, I really wanted to learn a development language, and I was really attracted to Node.js, mostly because it's designed to be scalable and efficient. And also, I was quite attracted to the asynchronous nature of it. But one of the reasons I picked that was it's JavaScript runtime. So I thought PowerShell is kind of a scripting language. This has JavaScript, maybe it should be quite easy to learn. But yeah, it's the way I learned was just through building stuff. So I just installed it. You can install it in Windows, and just started playing around with it, started building some web servers, some websites, and really just started playing around the platform. I'm a big learn through building kind of guy. So that's just one of the ways I picked up and started learning it.
Okay, so are there any resources that that you'd recommend people to, or point people to, that could sort of get them moving in this direction of, you know, the open source world? Is there one sort of collection, or do we have to, as you've mentioned, you've picked it up as you've gone along, but in your experience, based on your learning, is there sort of a couple of sources that people can refer to that will give them the knowledge that they need to be, you know, productive as quickly as possible?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's some really great documentation on the Node.js website, which I can send you a link to, absolutely. And in the context of Azure, there's some really great documentation Microsoft has around running your Node.js code inside of Azure App Service. And there's also some really great Node.js SDKs with Azure as well. So we've got some really good documentation there, so you can get up and started quickly in building things in Azure with Node.js.
So with your sessions at Ignite, now this is a question what we've been asking most people that come on the podcast, or the presenters that come on. What is the one thing that you think is the most important thing that people are going to get out of your session, that people are going to it's going to make people want to come. What's the big draw card that you think to get people to your session?
Yep, not a problem. So with my Node.js talk, I love doing demos. So most of my talks are going to be demo heavy, which I think personally I really like. Hopefully everybody else likes that as well. But kind of my last demo I have for my Node.js talk is I've written my own continuous integration and delivery pipeline using Azure Functions. And that's all written in JavaScript. So basically what you can do is you can push some code up into GitHub, and then this series of functions is then going to build that inside of Azure as a web app for you.
Nice. All right. As we also ask everybody else that is a guest on the podcast, is obviously Microsoft Ignite has come from a tech ed background, very technically focused, and generally get IT pros and developers. But if someone's sitting on the borderline here wondering whether the cost or the investment is worthwhile and what they're actually going to get out of it, and the information that's going to be shared, I mean, what's your advice to those sort of people who may still be considering whether it's worthwhile actually attending an event like Ignite?
Yep. So as a customer, I attended a few tech heads or Ignites before I joined Microsoft, and I found them super valuable for a couple of reasons. The first thing is I think the content's really great. I love getting really deep into the technical side of things. So there's some really great, strong technical talks at this event. But I saw it's also about making connections. So I really enjoyed kind of connecting with peers and talking about what I'm interested in technology, in the cloud, or what languages I'm interested in, and really conversing with your peers in the ecosystem and really talking about what their experiences are, what they like, and maybe even what kind of side projects they're working on.
You know, that's a question, that's the same answer, I should say, that pretty much everybody else is giving us as well when we ask that question is, pretty much networking is the main attraction or the biggest benefit of going to Ignite. And I must agree with that, because the sessions are great, but they are recorded, and there's only so much information like you can sort of take in on one day, so information overload. But it's also good to get out and sort of talk to people. So with that in mind, because there is a lot of walking at Ignite, and they are long days. And the other question that we've been asking people as well is, with Ignite, what's the best way in your mind to help increase stamina to get you through like a massive day like Ignite without crashing and burning?
Yep. So two things in my opinion. First one is preparation. Kind of cut back the late nights. I've been to a few nights and I see a few people going pretty hard with the late nights. So I think maybe dial them back a little bit. And the next thing for me is coffee. I enjoy my coffee. So I have a lot of coffee at Ignite, try and increase my awareness and kind of my absorption rate so I can absorb more content and really enjoy listening to the awesome speakers that are there.
So I don't think you'll be short of a coffee or two at Ignite. There's plenty of coffee carts around and obviously in the food hall as well. All right, so as we're winding up here, Michael, is there anything that we haven't covered or any last-minute messages you want to let people know about the sessions that you're running, and as Mark mentioned, why they really should come along, and particularly probably who they're targeted at? You know, who should come along? Is it to a particular audience, or, you know, do you think everybody should come along if they've got the availability?
Oh, I'd love everybody to come along if they've got the availability. But my talks are more focused. I'll just start with the Node.js one. Hopefully, it's for people who are using Node.js or maybe not using Node.js, but the people who aren't using Node.js, maybe it's a good talk to come to along to see how you can run it maybe a little bit differently inside of Azure. If you're currently running virtual machines inside of the cloud and you really don't want to do that anymore, or you've got some code that you just want to push and test out quickly, this might be a great talk for you. If you are familiar with Azure and you're not familiar with Node.js, it might be a good talk to come and listen to and see what Node.js has to offer and what you can do with it inside of Azure. And then with the Jenkins talk, if you're really interested in automation, from a software delivery point of view, but also from an IT pro perspective, it could be a great introduction to the platform and what you can do inside of Azure and what kind of tasks you can automate. And then conversely, if you are familiar with Jenkins, it might be a great talk for you to come along and listen to and see what's possible inside of Azure when building cloud applications.
Or if you're like me and Jenkins has got a really awesome little logo, that little guy with the moustache, and yep, he stands upright like the butler, I think that's pretty cool. I think it's cool enough to get me in there, because look, the whole development part and the whole platform part with Azure, I think, is a massive world, and it's a never-ending world. There's always stuff coming out, and they're always bringing things in and making things available and giving people sort of different options to do things on the platform. So it's definitely the future, and I think that's where I'm going to focus my energy on when I'm there at Ignite this time around. So with that in mind, how do people get in contact with you, Michael, in your day-to-day job? What's the best way?
So I'm on LinkedIn and Twitter, so definitely come and look me up on Twitter or LinkedIn, whatever you prefer. I've also recently launched a new blog, which I'm quite excited about. You can find it at blog.mf.cloud, and that's running in Azure on Azure Blob Storage using a new static HTML website generator written in
blog
Go, which is
.mf.cloud.
blog.mfriedrich.cloud.
Aha.
MF was taken already.
Yeah, I would have thought so, because there we go. It's come up.
Yep.
So it's actually changed to b.mfriedrich.cloud.
Yeah, exactly right. So I'm still obviously nice. got a backlog of enhancements I need to create, which is cool. But yeah, so that's running on Azure Blob Storage. It's all static HTML files, and it's using a new kind of Go-based static HTML generator called Hugo, which is gohugo.io, if you want to look that one up.
You're basically not using the 27% of the world are using.
No, I like trying out new things. So I found this one quite interesting. And it's in Azure Blob Storage as well, so it's not a traditional web server.
Powered by Hugo and on Azure Blob Storage. Nice.
Yep.
I like it. Okay, so it's b.mfriedrich.cloud, and that's FRIDRICH. Now, if you say it like it's spelled, it's friedrich, .cloud, or you can put in blog.mfriedrich.cloud. It'll take you to the same spot. So, all right, Rob, have you got any final questions for Michael?
No, I think he's pretty well wrapped it up. I think that it's very interesting, very interested to maybe go and have a play with the Jenkins stuff. Automation, I think, is a big process that a lot of people, even IT pros, need to have a look at. Very interesting that you can do something in an open source project like Jenkins, combine it with Azure. And then obviously we've also got the traditional JavaScript stuff with the Node.js, and again, connecting up to the open source, which is really, I think, opening up the opportunity for a huge amount of people to get involved with. But the best way probably to get up to speed with that is to come and visit Michael at his sessions and let him know that you heard his presentation here today on the Need to Know podcast. But I think with that, I'm pretty much done. What about yourself, Mark? Any last thoughts before we close out for the day?
No, I'm just I'm going to sort of get my head into this blog site of Michael's and have a bit of a read, because it looks very, very interesting. I do like your little logo, Michael, at the top left. It's MF. It's quite nicely done.
They may be my initials.
Yeah. No, it's quite nice. It's like a it looks like a football team. It's got the idea. It's got that sort of theme going.
Oh, okay. I do love my sport, so thank you.
Yeah. No, it looks you've done a good job. All right. Thank you for coming on the podcast. And with that, Rob, thanks for your time as well.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Office 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact. This podcast is voiced and produced by me, Mark Keane.